All right, Rob. So let's start this podcast off just like we have been starting off the last few podcasts. If you were telling a friend, if you could only tell a friend one thing that you learned from listening to Jocko Podcast 15, what would that one thing be?
When I was looking at this podcast a few days ago, like just from the description, it's like Henry the Fifth. I'm like, oh, sweet. I didn't know that was going to be a Shakespeare episode. So the first thing I learned was, hey, Jocko actually really likes Shakespeare more than the average person.
Are you talking about how that was very surprising? He gave us instructions on how to actually understand Shakespeare?
A little bit, yeah, with the Middle English and then to the early modern English. Is that what you mean? Like, all
And he was talking about that you have to have a lot of like prior knowledge to understand what Shakespeare was actually getting at. So he talked about like understanding human nature, understanding, I think he said, the Bible, understanding the language and the difference, like understanding that Shakespeare would sometimes just create his own words, which I thought was amazing.
And just to know that Shakespeare has an understanding of all the things he talks about, he's not just a playwright. Like, he actually has, and it's unknown, I guess, to modern man whether or not Shakespeare actually went to war or was some type of soldier, but he actually had that type of knowledge to be able to write for Henry V.
I wasn't aware of all the, you know, the theories. Like, one of the theories that surprised me was, we obviously don't know the true identity of Shakespeare, but one theory that was surprising was that it wasn't a single individual, and that's actually a group of writers. I'd never heard that before. That actually made me think. Let's start off on a tangent. Have you ever read any Shakespeare?
Not for pleasure. I mean, obviously you have to read some sort of Shakespeare through school, you know? So, nothing more than that. And
okay. So that's my same answer. I was thinking, yeah. I was like, well, besides like Hamlet, is Romeo and Juliet is Shakespeare?
That's Shakespeare,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Things like that. Like you're saying, the classics, like in college, I had to read that, read some of it, but I haven't taken it up myself. And it's for the reasons that Jocko was describing. Like, it is very difficult to understand, and you have to kind of put in the time. And I've never been at a place in my life where I wanted to do that.
Yeah, I still feel the same way. I kind of like it how, if I can get Shakespeare like this was awesome. Like having Jocko just kind of recite the King's St. Crispin speech and then just do it the way he thinks it should be. And I don't know if you went to any of those YouTubes for that he recommended to go see of the speech. And I think I agree with him. They all just kind of like thespianly do it, you know, rather than like, wait a minute, this is like before a war. This is something serious. This is going to be like a blood-curdling tone. This is going to be hardcore. And instead, you actually get the guys in the red stockings go, "Oh, doth thy tune," you know, like just being medieval fruitcakes instead of like, hey, we're about to storm a cat. Try to censor myself, but we're about to storm a castle. Like, this is not like, okay, let's do it for England, and then they just wave like little tiny pennant flags.
So no, I haven't seen that. I'm gonna have to go watch that because that sounds really, really funny. Yeah. To your point, though, I had a similar thought where I was like, "Wow, I would be totally lost without, you know, Jocko reads it and then he translates it into something very easy to understand." So all my notes that I took this week were of his explanations of them. I was like, "Wow, this is extremely valuable," because essentially what Jocko does on his podcast, the way I would describe it, is something. Have you ever heard of the website Brain Pickings?
Negative.
Okay, I think it's brainpickings.org, but you would actually like it because it's all about literature and books and ideas from books, and it's run by this woman named, I think, Maria Popova. But what she describes, what she does, is annotated reading, and she does it in written form, right? So she'll read a book and then write about like the lessons she learned. Where what Jocko's doing on the podcast with these books is he's doing annotated reading, but he's talking instead of writing it down. And I think out of all the books we've covered so far, his explanations for this podcast were the most valuable, because the content is so you know, if you're not exposed to, we've talked about it before, that he was an English major, so he studied this in school. I think both of his parents were English majors, if I remember correctly. So he just had an understanding, in addition to being obviously in combat all the time. So as I look over my notes, it's more about what I like that now we're on the 15th episode of, for all intents and purposes, the 15th class that we've attended together is how I'm really thinking about what we're doing here. And it's just based on my research, and research is like a very flimsy way to describe it, but the events that are taking place in the play happened in real life somewhere in the 1400s, because mm-hmm. King Henry was a real person. He was born in 1386, died in 1422, which I actually want to get to that in a minute. And yet, you know, separated by time and culture and all these other things, like what remains the same is this human's propensity for unbelievable cruelty and violence. And so if I said, hey, I listened to this podcast and this is something that I'm reminded of or something I learned is your naked infants spitted upon pikes. Yeah, and so when Jocko described what spitted was, spitted is a methodology used to cook small animals. You put the animal on a pole from mouth to rectum. And so I Googled spitted, and most of what comes up is like what they do for pigs. You know?
Okay.
That was at least on my Google image search, the thing that came up the most. And that to me is just like a reminder that, you know, like I've used this phrase a couple times in private conversations and on podcasts that, you know, humans really are the virtuosos of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't ever want to put yourself in a position. In this case, it's even worse because it's talking about siege war. Like, I love that he talked about, like, what is siege warfare? And it's the idea that you're going to... he talks about the beginning of the podcast. So this is the second part. I'm moving on to the infant thing because I don't think that needs any other further explanation other than, you know, that's unbelievably cruel and disgusting. So he talks about the dogs on leashes are famine, sword, and fire. And he's describing what King Henry has as his feet. And this is Shakespeare's words. And then, you know, that's... beautiful language, right? But I didn't understand what famine, sword, and fire was until Jocko explains it. And he says, in those days, that was war. In siege warfare, you starve them, right? So that's the famine. Once they were weakened, you burn their castles, that's fire, and you use the sword to finish them off. And that level, the reason I want to turn this over to you, Rob, is like, that's a completely different level of combat. It's a much more intimate level of combat than I think you see now, where you can drop something out of a plane or get shot by a sniper that's a mile away, or have an IED that you plant and then kill somebody weeks later.
Yeah,
like you're seeing them rot, like starve themselves to death. It takes an unbelievably long amount of time. Then you're lighting their castle on fire, and anybody that comes out, you're stabbing to death. That's gruesome. No,
But that's the strategy. Like when you have these high walled fortresses and castles that have archers and they're throwing hot oil over it, like it they're really hard to penetrate. So the best strategy would be isolate them from any type of supplies. They're consequently weakened. And then you just go in and just kind of stab them with your big sword. You're done.
So a few years ago, I had watched a documentary on they recreated some of the engineering feats that these castles had to defend from attacks. From like they'd have like holes for archers. Like once like what happens if an enemy basically the think about the problem is what do you do once an enemy has breached your walls, your outer walls? And so they'd have all kinds of other obstacles for them to get to before they can get to the city. So like you'd have some slivers where they would set off at different angles so you could have archers that could shoot at them but couldn't be shot at. You had traffic patterns, but they don't have cars. Like so you go from a big open area to people have to soldiers have to run into a small contained area, then you block that area off and you fill it up with water and drown them, or you throw oil, like you were saying. Like my point being is that the engineering feats that humans were able to do several hundreds of years ago, given what they had, was actually rather impressive. And the reason is probably impressive in the sense that, like, your life depended on you solving that problem.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about like World War One not wanting to be in like one of those battles. These are no different to me. I don't know, man. It's like hard to imagine like just being outside waiting for just the right time to strike. It probably takes weeks before, if not months. Like it, what was the Dan Carlin's podcast when we listened to? Was it when you talk about like the Hamburg revolutions and they were outside the city for months waiting for
it's Prophets of Doom. Right?
No, it wasn't Prophets of Doom. It was in dramatic tribe times, they surrounded a castle, waited for months, just sitting there, just, you know, eating their food. Like, hey, you gonna come out
yet?
Yeah,
that happened in Prophets of Doom.
Is it probably? It might be Prophets of Doom.
Well, Prophets of Doom also happened in Germany, so Munster, Germany. So that may be what we
Munster. The Munster Revolution. Thank you. That's
Prophets of Doom.
Okay, excellent. So that was like kind of like what I think about when it comes to anything when it, in this type of warfare, when you have somebody trying to overcome a fortified village, if you will, because I mean the whole village is inside. I mean all their crops, all their food, all their resources is outside the walls. So you literally just have to be like, all right, it's a waiting game.
It's interesting because if you think about it, families are embedded with soldiers. There's no separation. Like now, you know, the U.S. military goes, and in our case, like that's the country we live in, they go other places and fight as opposed to like you have a self-contained city. There is no separation of the armed forces, their version of the army, and the people, which is even scarier. So not only what I found interesting is not only were they cruel to the people they were trying to defeat, but the speeches that King Henry would give where he's like, they're fighting the French. They broke through the wall. So there's a hole in the wall, but the French are still defending it well. So they're not able to get all the way through. And Henry has a chat with his soldiers. And he says, you charge the hole. You either get through it or we fill up the hole with the dead of our army.
With the dead of the English.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that. We're either getting through it or we're going to fill it up with our dead bodies.
Yeah.
And then the other part, which was I found I've never heard before, it's towards the end of the book review, was that Henry was telling, it was like, if we're going to die, we have plenty, because they were talking about, oh, I wish we had the 10,000 archers that are just sitting back in England. Like, they're doing nothing today while we're fighting the French. Like, they'd be helpful here. And King Henry's like, no, we don't want any help. If we're going to die, we have plenty of guys here to die for the country. And then he makes the point, if we're going to win with fewer men, then that's better because that is more honor and glory for us. So basically saying, I want stacked odds. And we're either going to die and we're going to sacrifice our lives for our country. But if so that's the downside. But if we win, the upside is that it's going to be an impressive feat that we were able to do this to so few people.
Isn't that like an antithesis to one of Jocko's maxims? And when he's asked, like, how many people do we need to send to Iraq to win, or to just basically the Middle East? And his answer is quick and succinct, as many as it takes to win. But this is almost the exact opposite of it. It's just like, no, we have five or one soldier to every five Frenchmen. Wouldn't it be awesome if we won? Like, it's almost like, all right, well.
It's hardcore. It's a crazy, extreme view.
Extreme hardcore.
You know what's even more extreme? Did you remember that part where he's like, if you're scared and you're not willing to bleed with your brothers, then I'll pay for you to leave the battlefield.
Yeah.
I'd never heard that either. I was like, what? This guy is freaking nuts.
Like something like,
he's
I'll
like,
stamp,
I don't want any
I'll
cowards.
Stamp your passport and get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So I got to say, like this writing or this Shakespearean play is a little bit more hardcore than, like, you know, Romeo and Juliet.
You think?
it's like not what I expected, you know? Like, I got to say, like, you know, we've only read like Othello, Hamlet, The Taming of the Shrew, and obviously Romeo and Juliet. But never like Henry V. Like, where has this been the whole time? Like, I know Hamlet gets pretty awesome, but never really got into it. But there was a couple of lines that I wrote down that I thought were just like so hardcore. And when he's talking to the governor saying, hey, I'm going to kind of like paraphrase the beginning, but he's like, hey, governor, you might want to give up because I'm gonna, like, these dogs behind me are ready to attack, blah, blah, blah. And then he's,
and man.
What, you know what I'm about to say?
Yeah.
And he's just like, the gates of mercy shall all be shut up, and the fleshed soldier, rough and hard of heart, in liberty a bloodied hand, shall range with conscience wide as hell, mowing like grass your fresh, fair virgins and flowering infants. Like, yeah, not only are we going to kill you, we're taking your women and children too, and like, we don't give a fuck because blood's already on our hands, like your ear. You know what I mean? Like,
and what's fascinating to me is how he phrased it right around that part. He's like, listen, I have control of these guys now, but they're bloodthirsty, and eventually I'm going to lose control of my own soldiers. And by when that happens, you have no hope. So why don't you just go ahead and surrender now while everything's somewhat under control?
Yeah. Because they're just sitting there outside the castle. Let me ask you
a question. What, like, in that sense, am I not mistaken? Like, if they were to surrender, don't they kill the people that surrender anyways? Like, what happens to them?
I don't know. I don't think. I have no idea. That's a good question.
Would they take prisoners of war? Would they, like, because, you know, in going back to, like, we learned a little bit about Genghis Khan through Wrath of the Khans, and they would just, they'd say, hey, you know, we fight and kill you, or you can just surrender. We won't kill you and just pay, like, a tax to us.
I don't think
like,
that
I wonder
would,
what.
I don't I think that what, would happen in this case because they're inherently French. You can't just join the English. You know what I mean? It's just, I think there's different dynamics going into this. Then all right, now you fight for us, but yet again, you are undoubtedly a Frenchman. Like, you can't hide.
Yeah, it. Would they have? What, that's what I'm asking. Would they accept? Like,
and the whole point of this, the whole point of this war was to take over, to just be like, all right, well, the English wants to rule France, and you know, obviously, France is still a country, so they won, and this was a 100-year war to decide that. Like, this is the time of like Joan of Arc pumping up the French. And. And there was like four or five like huge battles throughout this, and many
that
little
is,
battles.
That like, you brought up something that's also interesting. Like the war lasted like 120 years.
Oh, you're on horseback, man! Like you can't just show up and have everybody like you're outside a castle for months at a time. Like just like you said, like this is going to be a slow process for, you know, the entire was it the Iberian Peninsula? There was a lot of it fought. Like all of France had to be on alert. But I don't think that you took prisoners of war because you're inherently French. And then it's like, not only are you captured, but you lose your country the same way. I think you fought to the death in a quarrel of this magnitude. But that's just my opinion, man.
Yeah, we'll have to figure it out. But so like you, I didn't know too much about Henry V. I'd heard the name before, but that's basically the extent of it. So I started reading about him. And I was actually surprised by two things. One, he died really, really young.
Yeah.
Died at 35 years old. And then I read how he died. And it kind of reminded me of the podcast we did a few weeks ago on The Forgotten Highlander. Because Henry V dies of dysentery.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, which is fascinating because the author of The Forgotten Highlander, I think his name's like Alistair Urquhart or something like that. He got dysentery a bunch of times in the jungles of Singapore.
What's dysentery again?
You're basically, you have the runs. So it's a,
he died
in the case of, in the book, they talk about the people that got dysentery in the jungle. Let me read this. It says dysentery is an
inflammatory disease of the intestine.
Which results in severe diarrhea and abdominal pain. So
they
would go to the bathroom like 20 times in the night in the jungles of Singapore. But he got it so many times that it ate away at his lining of the stomach. So he couldn't eat, even though he survived to like at least 90 years old. His whole life, he wasn't able to like eat properly. So I just thought it was interesting how it ties together, not only what's in the book, The Forgotten Highlander, but... somehow surviving that multiple times in addition to all the other diseases that we discussed on that podcast. And then the other thing, I thought something Jocko said is kind of a description. It could be a description of his podcast. And I don't know who said it, but it was talking about, it might have been Henry V, but he said, be an example to the lesser man, to the weaker man, and show them how to war.
Yeah.
And I feel the reason Jocko has such a dedicated following is because he's got this extreme level of discipline. He's got an extreme personality. He also has a lifetime of, you know, of unique experiences that a lot of people don't have any longer. That maybe people in Henry V's day did have, meaning that, you know, large percentage probably had to go into combat at some point in their life. And I feel that's what he's just showing you. Hey, you know, you humans have an unbelievable amount of potential that you could tap into. It's just not easy to tap into it. And you're going to have to do it through a lot of like hard work and sacrifice, which I find personally inspiring.
Okay. I can't disagree with you at all. And knowing what you had to do to just be alive in the 1400s and the 1500s, you had to fight. There was a lot of turbulence in Europe. You know, if you look at history, they're always just like redefining borders and things just kept changing from day to day. Like, it was a really weird time in history. Like, people just decided, like, even for England to be like, I think we should rule France. Like, they speak another language. They're completely different. Like, what's the point? In my mind, I don't know. Like, this is something that I'm speaking of that's probably even been long forgotten. I don't know if you know. But these times, not a good time to be just, like, sitting there just to whittling wood or doing whatever. Like, no, you need to get out there and protect the castle, dude. Like,
are you asking, like, what was the cause of the Hundred Years' War?
Essentially, because I conceive it as really England's like, you know what? I think we should have France, essentially. And they're just like, well, no, we are France. You are England.
I don't know. I think, like, a lot of it just comes down to at very first was land and then the resources contained therein. So that's kind of, I don't think you need much more of a reason besides that. Like, humans, what are we studying here? We're studying why humans do what they do. Like, what is our nature? And our nature seems to be, like, if we find somebody else with things that we want, that we'll try to take it from them. If they resist, well, we're willing to kill them for it. It's
but what did they have at that time? You're just, besides just land, like, you pretty much
land,
have
people, wealth, like, what? No different from any time in history, I would argue.
Yeah.
Are humans ever not wanting more? Like, that seems to be innate in our, in like the foundation of how we live lives. Like, we just, what's that old quote? It's like, most of men's problems stems from his inability to sit quietly in a room
for a half like, an hour.
Yeah. Or whatever it is. It's just like, we, why do we do anything we do? It's bizarre. That's what I mean. Like, we're a peculiar species. That's why I find reading, that's why history is so fascinating, because you learn about all these things. Like, think about it. This is a war that happened over five generations.
Yeah, like maybe even more. I mean, it was like 120 years. It wasn't just 100. It was like
116 years, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 4 days. That's the exact. Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for the Hundred Years' War right now. So that's what I mean. It's just like, You just get used to certain things. They are, yeah. Like, the world is too complex to question everything. And so my point being is, like the one of the greatest like quotes I ever have is, like, it's from the Stoic Emperor, and it's like, business is like nature. It doesn't care if you arrive at the right answer for the wrong reasoning. Evolution demands survival. It doesn't ask you to show your work. And so my point being is, like, I think about things in, like, capturing economic value, right? But in this case, like, they're using war as a mechanism to capture value, and the stuff they value is the land and the resources and the people that this other institution, what we just happen to call countries, happens to have at the moment. And so humanity dictates that in those situations, if somebody wants what other people have, like, they're willing to go to the most extreme cases, and in some cases kill for that. So even though we know that intellectually, like, it's just, if you step back and think about it, it's a very strange behavior.
I want to take this into another direction real quick, and it's going to take you're going to see it's going to take a weird direction, not a weird direction, but a weird direction for you. But this whole concept of like Band of Brothers that was kind of, I don't know what you call it, but it's a truism that happens when you go to war with somebody, that you honestly become like a brother, you become an equal, you become probably a plethora of other terms of endearment, right? Like just endless, like your family. And I'm watching, and you'll find this probably like either boring, but I'm watching Ken Burns' his documentary on baseball, which is probably like a 20-something hour long video documentary from the inception to the end. And it's a commitment to watch it all, but I find it very interesting because it parallels a lot of the country's history, as in U.S., and how segregation to baseball was kind of a byproduct of going to war together. That these guys came back and they're just like, hey, I fought alongside this guy. This guy's my brother. Why can't he play baseball? And just like,
interesting.
It was never really mentioned, but it was something like there was overtones. Or is it overtones or undertones? There was undertones of it, and there was just like little comments of people throughout history in baseball saying like, yeah, I because a lot of them went like, you know, they skipped years to go off and fight World War II, and then they came back. And you're just like, no, man, these guys fought alongside us. I would do anything for them. And like, eventually they were accepted into baseball. But a lot of that had to do with the relationships that they formed in war. So I was thinking like, man, that's like a good byproduct of war. Not like I'm a advocate of like, hey, let's go to war so we can all get along sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. I just thought that very interesting because if you watch all of it, like it's a very, very big task, but you see a good sense of the history through the eyes of baseball. And because of Chaco Academy, I've seen kind of like a connection that even they didn't get, because there was a bigger point there that I don't think, like, well, either it's not baseball, it's not relevant to the thing, but there was
definitely, well, there's a
pieces there.
I heard you ever heard of the author Sebastian Younger?
Yes.
He was on a podcast, I heard, and he has he came out with a book.
Oh, he did.
Did you ever watch that documentary?
He did Tribe. Tribe. Yeah,
no, I think it's Tribe. But he talked about that, the same thing, and Jocko's talked about that in the podcast because he did this. I think the documentary was based on his book, but it was this great documentary called Restrepo, which I think might be still on HBO.
That was an HBO. Yeah,
It's a fantastic documentary. But he talked about the bond, the same thing you're talking about, how when you're going through these life-changing scary experiences, you get really, really close to people, and then when you're removed from that situation, you long, like, they look back wistfully or whatever the word I'm looking for,
whimsically, like
they
I don't know,
thank you, they look back at the time when they were scared to death, but they had this really strong community that everybody depended on one another. And they long for those days. And when they come back home and they don't have that community, that leads to like post-traumatic stress disorder, suicide, drug abuse, all these other things. So it's actually, I've never heard it in the context of, hey, this World War II might have helped desegregate. Thank you, desegregate baseball. But that's really actually like amazing.
That's an interesting point that I don't think anybody has ever really talked about, because it still took a few years after that, because there was a lot of, you know, old-timey thinking. But eventually it was just like, no, these guys, like, you can take a bullet and shoot a bullet for the country. You can hit a baseball for the country. And it was just like a paradigm shift in the way they thought about things because of war. So this is just an interesting side note, especially since there was, there was some talk of, like, the Band of Brotherhood. I don't know. I was thinking about it a lot yesterday. But, like, one more thing I wanted to discuss is this one is odd. Usually there's like a moral to the story when it comes to Jocko and he applies it to something else. But this just seemed like he just wanted to enlighten people on Shakespeare. He was just like, no, guys, don't be intimidated. Like, he's telling Navy SEALs, like, I generally think his audience is like, you know what I mean? Like he thinks of his peers and he's like, hey, don't be intimidated by Shakespeare. You know, don't be worried about it. Like don't be intimidated. Like, this is, I'll walk you through it sort of thing. Like, it was kind of like just an overlap into something else that well, I don't know. This just might be his English major nerdiness that's popping out. But it just seemed like he wanted to expose people to basically just Shakespeare on this, because there was no...
Well, the lesson he says at the end, he's like, listen, the entire Shakespeare catalog is available for free online at any library. Like, it's not protected by copyright. Like, it's, you could go out there, and I think we'll end on this, where he's like, it applies to the same thing. Like, the same work, like, somebody, he was talking about, like, the difference between, you could have a dumbed-down version that somebody else did, but it's not going to be as satisfying if you learned about it yourself and then had to go and learn, okay, oh, I don't understand what that means. And he even talked about he had to look up certain words for the podcast. Like, that, going out and doing it yourself is very fulfilling.
Okay.
It's fulfilling. Yeah. And I think that applies to so many other things. So, looking ahead towards next week, though, I'm extremely interested, because it's the next week's podcast is on this book called Machete Season, which is the killers in Rwanda speak. And it says, just looking ahead real quick, it says during the spring of 1994 in a tiny country called Rwanda, some 800,000 people were hacked to death one by one by their neighbors. And then several years later, this journalist travels to Rwanda to interview the 10 participants in the killing. So we're going to be listening to the people. Like, the book is based on the words of the people that hacked people to death.
Of the oppressor.
So the people that actually did the killing. So it's going to be pretty crazy. I looked up to see, because I was like, oh man, this sounds really like terrifyingly interesting to me. Unfortunately, the book is not on Audible, or else I would listen to the book before next week.
Okay.
But if you want to get two free audiobooks to any of the books that we talk about, whether it's Jocko's Extreme Ownership book, which him and Leif narrate, Dichotomy of Leadership is a new book, Storm of Steel, which we covered last week, anything from Shakespeare, Audible, you can click the link in the description. You'll get two free audiobooks. Even if you don't continue on with the trial, those two free audiobooks are yours to keep. And it's a way to help out this podcast and to get you some, you know, Audible. I'm addicted to Audible. How could you not like it? It's amazing. If you like podcasts, you like reading, then Audible is kind of a combination of two. And if you want to learn not just about military history, but if you want to learn about the history of entrepreneurship, I have a podcast called Founders, shameless plug at every episode. If you want to hear stories from the life, I'm working on like a 3-part series of Richard Branson right now.
Yes.
Henry Ford, Sam Walton, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, James Dyson, Yvon Chouinard. I've covered over 45 different company builders.
Polaroid guy was awesome too. What was his name?
Edwin Land was a freaking genius, which was actually the Steve Jobs hero. He's kind of like Steve Jobs before Steve Jobs existed. There's a lot of similarities in their career, and Steve Jobs definitely patterned a lot of his career off what he learned from Edwin Land. That guy has a great quote I actually want to share that I keep on my phone all the time to remind myself, because we're kind of besieged by distractions in the internet age that we live in. And here's a quote real quick. He says, "My whole life has been spent trying to teach people that intense concentration for hour after hour can bring out in people resources they didn't know they had." One of my favorite quotes of all time from an entrepreneur, and he should listen to him, because he tried to limit all distractions from his life. He winds up having, I don't know if you know this, Rob, I think I mentioned this podcast, but he had more patents than I think he's more patents than anybody besides Thomas Edison and one other guy. He had by the time he retired, he had 500 or 600 patents to his name.
Wow.
He developed obviously the Polaroid camera that everybody knows and loves, but he's the reason why you can drive your car at night and not be blinded by the oncoming headlights. That he was the one that solved that problem, and 80 years later, it's still used by car companies today. He developed spy plane technology for the United States military in World War II, I think it was.
Yeah,
the guy just had a crazy life. It's based on the book Insisting on the Impossible, The Life of Edwin Land. So fascinating. But if you're interested in that, you just search Founders Podcast at any podcast app you're listening to this, and also leave links to Apple Podcast, Overcast, listening to it on the internet, wherever you want. It's in the show notes of every episode we do. And that's it. I guess, Rob, we will reconvene next week, and we're going to learn about what is going to be an unbelievably difficult subject, which is the hacking to death of 800,000 people.
All right. Good morrow, sire.
All right. I don't know what that means, but I'll talk to you later. Bye.